For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the... I'm going to interrupt the podcast for a second here. We have a free agent acquisition here at the Stargazing Podcast, bringing in a little bit of extra help for the stretch run. Mark and I are joined today by old friend Robert Tiffin. Robert, how are you, buddy?
Pretty good. This is, just like Ken Hitchcock was brought back for a second run at Glory, so too have I joined you all to restore this podcast to where it's supposed to be.
That's definitely a strong parallel to draw the Ken Hitchcock Part 2 era. Mark is here as well, of course. Mark, also hello, and also how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to see that we're buyers at the deadline here on defending Big D.
We
got our free agent.
The podcast has been hanging around all season, right? We've been hanging around, and at some point you just have to look at the room and reward the crew for their hard work and say, hey, some reinforcements are coming, and now we're going to see if we can't convert that into some better podcasts down the stretch.
Hey, if we can bring in Robert at the deadline, certainly the Stars can bring in somebody of equal stature.
Well, you guys had a little more cap space than they do, so it makes it a little easier.
Yeah, well, we got you on a hometown deal.
That is true. All my stuff is here.
It's very can't podcast it. He also doesn't know. Fun fact about Tiffin: he doesn't follow any other teams in the league, so this is the only podcast he's capable of contributing to.
Yep. No, that's true. How are the Nordiques doing, by the way?
Fantastic.
Good to hear.
Aren't they playing the Whalers tonight?
It's going to turn into something. I feel good about it.
They're going to play. They play in front of more fans than the Arizona Coyotes will next season. So it's all going to work out great.
Excellent. Well, Hartford should be good too. They got that Brendan Shanahan. I have a good feeling about them going forward.
Yeah, he's a big discipline guy. I think he's got front office potential. But we're not here to talk about the past. Well, I guess we are here to talk about the past because the season is ongoing and we're going to talk about some stuff that has happened. Obviously, we're going to pivot a little bit from the bright shininess of last time when we podcasted on the back of a 4-game winning streak, and things are a little bit different now. Maybe not the best stretch of games. Dallas has lost 3 in a row with a surprisingly tricky Montreal coming up tomorrow, then New York, Washington, Edmonton. So I guess then Carolina, yay. So a stretch of meaningful games. Obviously the trade deadline's coming up. Somebody made out with Miro Heiskanen and he's on the shelf. There's just a lot going on. Unfortunately, we finally felt like the Stars maybe were solidifying themselves in the playoff race, and technically, as we record tonight, they're sitting in ninth. Of course, they've got some games in hand on Vegas, who's ahead of them, and of course Vegas is having lost 5 in a row, is one of the few teams right now that is performing worse than Dallas. So you don't necessarily hate their chances, but this is hardly a kick your feet up and relax situation. And I'll throw it to the crew. Where do you guys want to start?
I would start with the last 3 games just because my abject positivity threw the team into a tailspin.
And it was so. Those last 3, of course, Dallas won 6-3 versus Minnesota in a game that probably wasn't as close. Some score effects, some goaltending shenanigans late, but then dropped 2-1, a regulation heartbreaker against the Predators, followed by I have the joke all ready to make about if you watch the first 2 or 3 minutes of the Rangers game, you maybe thought that you could go on about your evening, it was over, but ended up being a 7-4 Rangers win, and then facing the Toronto Maple Leafs with an AHL goaltender and their best player suspended, Dallas responded with an Dallas 4-0 shootout loss. So it's not been a wonderful stretch, and I guess first question to you, Robert, why did you let us talk you into getting back on the podcast during a week like this one?
Well, I felt pretty good about how things were going. They just beaten Minnesota 6-3, as I recall. So it seemed like a four-game winning streak. And if I know anything about these Stars, it's that a winning streak just means they're going to keep on winning. So it seemed like the right time. How are they doing lately, by the way? I haven't checked up on them lately.
So, Mark, I'll let you answer that one first. How are the Stars doing, in your opinion?
Well, a week ago, I think I made a hot take of the team wasn't missing Miro Heiskanen because they didn't play him to his strength anyways, and they really missed him the last three games, as other teams figured out that he was about one of the only defenders who carries the puck out of the zone. And so, amazingly, an aggressive forecheck against the current configuration of the Stars' defense works wonders. But I prefer to look at the positives. And on the positive side, I have two things to say. John Klingberg and Thomas Harley is an awesome thing. And I've never seen such a big smile on John Klingberg's face as they celebrated last night in one of the few highlights of the game. And I don't even remember what it was, but they did something that was pretty cool together and they were incredibly happy about it.
So you're saying Harley is maybe an upgrade over Esa Lindell in the puck department?
I definitely so. And the two have chemistry. And the other thing I will say is that as much as everybody hates Joel Kiviranta, and Studenich together is wonderful. They have speed, they attack, and they even made Radek Foxa look good in the middle of them.
Ugh. Be a little bit cautious with that kind of language. Oh, no, we don't want to get explicit right.
Look at Natural Stat Trick. That combination was incredible for their 1 minute of ice time. But together they were on the ice together a lot more with other centers, and they looked great. They both brought speed, they both are aggressive on the forecheck. Let's make that a fourth line. I'm happy. So those are the two good things I have to say.
And I will say the interesting thing about Thomas Harley is he played very sparingly, just under 9 minutes against Minnesota, just over 9 minutes against Nashville. But over the last two games, so against the Rangers, he played 17:45, and against Toronto, he played 18:27. So for a team that is, shall we say, reluctant sometimes to play the less tenured members of the roster, It kind of that stat kind of made me take mention, and we'll bring you back into the conversation here, Robert. Do you think that this is, you know, obviously Miro will come back at some point. Are we seeing the ascension of Thomas Harley into more of a roster regular, or is this driven by positional need?
Yeah, I think big part of it was he only got the chance because Sekera was out. Mm. So now we're and Joel Hanley is not large, so he doesn't get to play 20 minutes a night. So someone had to do it. And you know, I think anyone playing with Klingberg these days still makes Rick Bowness feel uneasy, just because Klingberg is legitimately having a pretty bad defensive season. But I think it was mostly just the opportunity was there. They got to play someone there. And as long as Harley isn't actively shooting the puck on his own net, he was going to keep getting chances. But the fact that he hasn't gotten those power play minutes he was promised at some point, which is what you'd think they would do if they actually, you know, like you saw when Robertson actually was given a chance to stay in the lineup last year, they started giving him power play minutes fairly quickly because it was apparent, oh yeah, his strengths would only be maximized by putting him in this position. So let's do it. Whereas with Harley, they still haven't done that for who knows what reason. So that still tells me they only really see him as a third pairing guy. And that's even though he's playing with Klingberg, he's still only getting those, you know, 14 minutes at most or something like that. He's not really getting, you know, the Klingberg. He's not scaling up the way Yanni Hakanpaa does when he plays with Miro or Suter or someone. He gets those 20 minutes. They're still keeping Harley away from the tough minutes as much as they can.
And you know, it I can see it both ways, right? There were, for all that we're giving him flowers right now, there were a couple of in particularly early against the Maple Leafs and a couple against the Rangers as well, there have been some blemishes. Right? So let's not, I do think it's important, as much as we like the potential and as much as there have been flashes and as much as this, at least, podcast is pleased for Harley taking a larger role in the lineup, let's not be blind to the fact that there have been some bad decisions. There was a pass just directly across the crease. There have been some turnovers. There have been some issues that, you know, perhaps explain why he's maybe not, you know, 20 plus minutes a night at this stage. Fair?
Yeah, I mean, fair. Yeah, of course. But I feel like that's, I don't know, what's the best way to put this? That is the case for every single player in the league. Like Ryan Suter is still making mistakes, and he's on balance having a pretty good season, but he's still, like, you saw him behind the play for one of Toronto's first goals last night because he just can't keep up anymore. He just doesn't have the legs. So that's going to lead to mistakes of ability as opposed to mistakes of decision. And I feel like to us, you know, the mistake is a mistake regardless of where it comes from. But to coaches, if a mistake comes out of decision, even if the player has superior ability, like Carly does overall among at least some other players in the lineup, not saying Suter necessarily, although, I mean, I would also say that coaches tend to punish mistakes of decision a lot more than they punish mistakes of ability. Because they just see, well, you know, you live with that and that's fine. Whereas, oh, whoops, Harley's what, 23 or whatever. And he didn't quite make a decision that a 36-year-old would usually make. So, you know, he has to be punished for it, I guess. So those are the things where I'm like, yeah, of course, but everyone makes mistakes. Every single player, maybe bar Miro Heiskanen, is going to have a bad read here and there. But what's the solution? The Stars aren't deep enough to like punish these players for it. Although yeah,
that was where I was going to go next, because Mark, I know you had some comments on the Twitter over the last couple of days. What is the plan as far as you're aware right now with distribution and ice time amongst the Dallas defense?
I mean, I'm fully anticipating if Sekera has his game legs back, that he's back in, Hanley's back out, and you'll probably see Sekera and Hakanpaa and. It remains to be seen whether that's third pair or whether they move up the second pair and Klingberg and Harley kind of stick at a third pair. There was a little bit of a trial with Hakanpaa and Suter that went disastrously wrong. And so I think you're back to Suter playing with Lindell in the current configuration. And that's about as good as this team's going to get. The only concern I have in the whole thing is that the only real puck movers that you have out of those six are Harley and Klingberg, and they're on the same pair. And so it's susceptible to the forecheck and getting stuck in its own zone.
Yeah, I would actually be fine if they, I mean, this is just, you know, armchair coaching now, but like, I would, to your point, yeah, you'd like to have a puck moving threat on more than one defense pair. So I would actually be okay if they put Harley with Hakanpaa and gave them those like 15, 16 minutes a night or whatever, shelter him a little bit, put Klingberg with Lindell. I know it's not everyone's favorite pairing, but I don't want Lindell on his offside. That's only going to make him even worse. So put Lindell with a partner he knows. And then you have Suter, who, you know, he should be able to carry any pairing, right? You got a trusted veteran defenseman. So I don't care who you put with Suter. He should be able to figure it out until Heiskanen gets back. But if he can't carry Sekera, you know, Sekera's played in his offside before. So you know what? Throw him a Sekera and let him sink or swim based on his own merits.
All slow pairing.
I think this is also where we have, this is where Klingberg having a down season is particularly painful for the Stars, because it feels like in past years, the answer would have been, well, Klingberg just starts playing six more minutes a night and you solve your lack of puck moving by playing Klingberg on more lines, right? But unfortunately, the cost benefit of him is misconfigured so far this season, and it's just really it's put him in a bind, man. This is not a team that was particularly gifted at moving the puck anyways, and now Miro is down and out, and Klingberg has to carry the load, or it's got to be the rookie Harley, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
Well, there are some usage issues there with Klingberg as well. If you take a look at the minutes that he's getting with the forward lines, he's getting his minutes with Fox's line. He's getting his minutes with Sagan's line. He doesn't really get time.
Yeah. What's the problem? Top six players. Two top six players. What's the problem, Mark? Fox and Sagan, two top six players.
Well, in minutes.
I mean,
those minutes if they didn't deserve them. Coaches don't just hand out minutes if the players aren't earning them. This is a merit-based league. Bonus is a veteran coach. I'm sure he's not just going to be giving players minutes, even if they're playing badly. He's made that clear with all the young kids. They have to earn their minutes. I'm sure the same applies to Sagan and Foxa.
Tiffin, how are you going to make up a multi-goal deficit without more Radek Foxa? I mean, you gotta go to the whip on the thoroughbreds. You can't keep the pluggers like Gurionov on the ice when you need goals.
You know, the skeptics might say Roddick Fox has only scored like one goal this year, but the optimists would probably say, look at all of the goals he is going to score this year because he's due, right?
He's due, yeah.
He's That's so fair. Due. He is the doest of due that any player can be due. I mean, he should be playing every shift.
Frankly. It's funny. This is a really good example.
Almost like Nichushkin was due.
Yeah. Well, this is a really good example of something called the sunk cost fallacy. And what that actually means, Robert and Mark, in case you don't know, is, well, when a ship with treasure on it sinks, right, you just have to keep going down until eventually you get the treasure. And they call it the sunk cost because what it means is you're supposed to just keep doing the thing over and over and over again because eventually you're going to get the treasure.
You got all that treasure. Yeah, I'd sink five or six ships just to try to get that treasure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't need a ship. I don't need a boat. I need some treasure.
I need treasure. Let's get some of them coins. Woo! Think of all the ships you could buy with that treasure. Three or four at least. That'd be great.
Think about all the ships you could buy. Although there is, we make light of it, but I haven't read anything. I mean, mono can be a different journey for everybody, but it's definitely not the sort of thing that you shake off over the course of a long weekend. The unfortunate thing, jokes aside for the Stars, is this is probably a challenge that they're going to have to solve to some, like, this isn't a situation where the answer is, Miro's going to get healthy and everything's going to be fine. Like they're still in a good position relative to the lower reaches of the playoffs. They've got some winnable games coming up. Like they kind of need to scrape the dirt off and make sure that this doesn't turn into a 4, 5, 6 game streak. I mean, Edmonton all of a sudden looks like they can maybe win a couple of games. Again, you know, you look at Montreal and New York, and if it was any team other than the Dallas Stars, I'd say they had a couple of opportunities to right the ship, but you know, they're the Dallas Stars, so who knows? And then, you know, things went great the last time they played Washington, which sets up a very high profile game against the Edmonton Oilers. And this is a team that tends to succeed wildly in situations where there is a lot of pressure and a need to perform assertively, followed by, you know, Carolina. They don't play hockey in North Carolina. Those guys probably aren't any good.
Too
right?
hot. So, it's too hot. How can you play ice hockey in the South? It's too hot.
Yeah, it'll never work. It'll never work. So like I said, this is unfortunately a situation where the answer has to come from within. And the reality is there's, you know, Thomas Harley is the piece that you would call up from the Texas Stars. I don't know that Ben Gleason is having the type of season that makes you think, hey, he might fix the defense. Same thing with Dellandrea. There's not exactly sort of the cavalry's already here, right? That's Jason Robertson. Yeah. And he's doing a great job. So, you know, maybe it comes outside of the defense. What does this team do to get the transition game going?
It's interesting because traditionally, Jim Neal has not been shy about making moves, you know, earlier or even halfway through the season if it's clear that the Stars aren't deep enough, right? Zuccarello, obviously, like, yeah, they had a top line that was going pretty good, but they knew they needed another scorer, right? That was, what, 2018-19? So that was right after Hitchcock rode Ben Sagan and Radulov to basically being the same sort of one-line threat that this year's team is. So they knew they needed more. So they went and got Zuccarello, you know, at the deadline, but they knew they needed a second line, right? And it was the right thing to do. Also, earlier in that year, the checking line wasn't working. Devon Shore was a disaster. So Jim Neal had no compunctions about trading a younger, cheaper Devon Shore for Andrew Cogliano with 3 years still on the contract. It was kind of weird, but overall, Andrew Cogliano was the better player, and it was the right move to do. This year, nothing. They haven't changed the checking line, even though the checking line's, whatever you say the checking line is, you know, probably just look for wherever Fox is playing. But whatever the checking line is this year, it's been horrible. It's been the worst third line or second line or whatever you want to call it that they've had in recent memory. No changes. Secondary scoring, haven't had it all year. They've been a one-line team all year, you know, with little bursts here and there, whether it's Sagan gets a little hot or Gurionov has a couple goals or, you know, Ben has an overtime goal or whatever, but they haven't gotten anything approximating second line all year. They have two third lines.
And I do need to interject. So in the course of that rant, Denis Gurionov was actually benched again and then put back into lineup and then benched again just while you were, just to keep you
He's
guys.
He's got
to
earn his minutes. He wasn't creating enough chances. We got to throw someone in there who also isn't working, but is a different person, and let's go ahead and give them a chance. So we have here a piece of cardboard with a face on it, and yes, piece of cardboard hasn't done a great job this year, but we got to switch things up. And you might say you try.
Luke Blendenning playing... wins lots of face-offs for this team, Robert. You put some respect in your mouth.
Luke Blendenning is getting more minutes. You know, I don't even want to talk about ice time. It's we all know the problems. Luke Blendenning is great and actually a much more enjoyable person than a piece of cardboard. Unlike some other players I could name, who until he got a haircut, Michael Roffel was basically as personable as a piece of cardboard. Also, I'm sure a great guy and everything.
Piece of cardboard draws a lot of penalties.
He does draw a lot of penalties. He also doesn't do anything while drawing those penalties, like say being on a breakaway where he's getting penalized, or he doesn't go on the power play, doesn't do anything. Like, you have too many players who don't do, you don't get any of that, what do they call it, like tertiary or secondary incidental offense, I guess is what you really need, right? That was the virtue of Fox a few years back. Even when he came up in 2015-16 in that big season, it was awesome because he was playing with Roussel and Hemschke. And also throwing in, you know, chipping in goals, which younger players are more prone to do. The problem with going out and
slow clapping right now that you got a Hemschke reference.
You knew it had to happen. But
for those of you that aren't on the Skype that we're recording, we've got the cameras on. Tiffin is wearing a Hemschke jersey, a hat with Hemschke's picture on it. He's got a Hemschke pillow over his shoulder in the office. This is amazing.
No, that's actually Alex Hemschke. He's just unconscious right now. So. I promised his wife I'd drive him home. Anyway, that's terrible. It's a joke. I'm not weird. The whole thing is when you go out and get players like Luke Glendenning or Michael Roffel, or you say, I'm going to stick with Roddick Foxa, even though he can't do the one thing that we are really confident that he's good at doing anymore. Now, not only are you committed, like, cause these are older players that are harder to move, right? Devin Shores are a little easier to move. You can't do anything now. You're stuck, and you have no hope of getting that tertiary offense from them either, because you're not going to get, you know, Luke Glendenning gave you a few goals early in the year that were a great surprise, but he's not giving you another 10 goals this year. Raffle's not giving you another 5 goals probably this year, and Roddick Foxa, if he gets the 5 goals, would be a miracle. Like, these are all things that when you're a team that plays on the margins as much as, I mean, look at their goal differential. Dallas is a team that lives and dies by like one goal most nights, at least against good teams. They need those little bits of extra offense because their top line, it's been well documented. It's only when their top line is controlling a game that they can really do anything. I mean, look at their schedule. Look at their schedule over the last like 20 games since their last 3-game losing streak in mid-January. They've won, well, like 14 games, and they've been against, in order, Buffalo, Detroit, Philly, New Jersey, Boston, Winnipeg in overtime, Nashville 4-3, then Chicago, Winnipeg, Buffalo, Winnipeg, and then Minnesota and LA, both while giving up 3 goals. So most of their wins over the last 20 games are against bad teams, with a couple of marginal playoff teams, and then that one against Minnesota and that one against Boston that were great wins. But this isn't a team that's like out there, you know, saying, oh, we're actually pretty good. When they're playing good teams, they're usually losing or they're at least giving up a lot of goals while winning. Like the last time they shut a good team down was January when they won against Boston 6-1. They haven't had a dominant win against a good team outside of that in a long time.
It's been a minute. And I want to bring you back in here, Mark, a little bit on the topic of tertiary and kind of backup scoring, is one of the other storylines I wanted to pull out this week is some comments Rick Bonus made. So Jacob Peterson has been riding the pine. And one of the things, and I struggle with Bones because, you know, coach speak is a real thing, right? So you can't, as much fun as it is, you can't be knee jerk at what they say because they're saying it's nonsense and flim flam. But it was a little bit head scratching to hear comments about pace of the game and needing to, you know, speed up, talking about Jacob Peterson and having a benching be a reaction to that, because it just felt like to me, if the problems you're having are a player not being able to get into the flow of the game, then taking him out of the game seems to be a risky move. And Mark, my question to you is, do you think that we should be seeing more of old Jake Peterson at the moment?
I think Peterson's an interesting case because Peterson's contributions tend to come when he's playing with other skilled players. And so you're really talking about a top six role. And the place that you'd naturally see him is with, you know, the second line in Gurianov's spot. And so they try periodically to make him a fourth line center. But I don't know that he's really absolutely ready to anchor a line on his own. And that fourth line for Dallas tends to be a mishmash anyway. And there's no way that Peterson's, you know, superior hockey IQ, if you will, is going to translate into what we've come to expect. The goals that he's scored have been with quality players. And right now there isn't a spot for that. And so that's what, and the speed comment, I think, maybe goes more to the Kiviranta and even Studenich, or Studenich, if you will, where they bring literally speed to that fourth line, which is at least a role that line can perform. It gives that group of three forwards a purpose.
Purpose is important. You need to be out there doing a specific thing. I think that's pretty clear. I've always believed strongly in that.
Well, and I thought that those two and Glendening were really the highlight on offense in that whole Toronto game. maybe it was just because I was
so sad.
Yeah, you know, I was watching them just because I was interested to see how Studenich's game translated up at the NHL level after watching him a couple of games down in Texas, and it translated really well. And so that's one of the reasons. You know, Glendening can move his way around in different positions a lot more than Foxa, and so that's one of the reasons why I was kind of interested in seeing, you know, Foxa center those two and have that be a line, because to tell you the truth, Foxa going in and getting his gravy goals in front of the net, he's not stepping in anybody's way if he's playing with Kiviranta and Studenich.
I mean, that is fair. It's awfully hard for, I mean, he's in the way in the sense that he's aggressively erratic, Foxa, but.
Well, it allows him to play F3, and Fox is a much better F3 than he is an F1 or an F2.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, and that's where one of the biggest hurdles for Foxa, who again, maybe is still recovering from his big wrist injury and everything. I don't know, but the puck is not getting to the offensive zone when Radek Fox is on the ice. That's the bigger problem. Whether that's his line mates, because he needs those quicker guys. He needs the Antoine Roussel type to really be that F1 and actually, you know, get.
Hey, maybe Dallas can get him.
Yeah, oh, he's, I bet they could if they wanted to. They could get Louis Erickson too if they wanted to. Absolutely.
Erickson has 14 assists on the year. Let's not be downgrading him too much.
Yeah, they could absolutely get all these players. Erickson's also getting tons of power play time, I think, last time I checked. But regardless, these are things that could happen, sure. But the bigger root issue here is they don't really have cohesive lines below the top line. So that's why you have a coach who can look at you with a straight face and say, well, I don't know what to do for a second line, so let's throw Radulov back out there with Ben and Sagan for the third or fourth, like, distinct time they've tried that this season, even though they're a defensive disaster. They have been all year, and yet he tries them again because he doesn't know what else to try. Same thing with Foxa. Like, I would even be more open to seeing that level of experimentation with Foxa because his problems are so much worse in that it's not like it's, oh, yeah, they can create some offense, but at what cost? He's not creating any offense, and he's not even breaking even defensively either. He's like minus 15 on the year or something.
Yeah, the height of the FCC, it used to be like those three got on the ice and just nothing bad happened. Right. And sometimes something good happened, and that was gravy. But the real value of that line is you just knew that whatever portion of the game they played was going to be non-eventful.
Yeah, which goes to show, like, having Cogliano and Como, who are both pretty fast guys, you have to have a line that can play well in all three zones if it's going to play well in one of those zones, at least consistently. I think Ben Sagan and maybe Radulov are the converse of that, where, yeah, they're pretty good in the offensive zone, but they're so rough the other way that they can't consistently spend enough time in the offensive zone to really build up a positive impact because they're so bad the other way. And I think Fox's line has been that way, just the opposite.
Here's my concern with the whole thing. Yeah, you have a team that is dependent on dump and chase. And if you're going to dump and chase, you have to have good forecheckers.
You have to chase.
And the one area where Dallas is so weak is they have literally one guy who's a decent F1. And that's Kiviranta, who gets 7 minutes a game. know, and Radulov used to be an average F1, but everybody on his line was so skilled that it didn't make any difference.
Well, I think he was. I would say he used to be above average, and now he's probably maybe average as an F1.
Well, he was always too slow to be a really good F1.
He's so strong, though. He was so strong that once he got there, he still went along.
If he could get him on the boards, he would take it away. There's no doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'd say I agree with that, but I think the problem's also compounded. And you know, my big takeaway here is that, unfortunately, the two problems we're talking about are linked, right? And it's right now the defense, in particular that Miro, is so limited in its ability to move the puck and function that it puts it heightens the burden mm-hmm. on the forward to drive play without the benefit of the defense, right? And so it would be one thing if, you know, you could say, yeah, you know, the Fox line or whatever is having trouble progressing the puck. But hey, if you've got, you know, the cheat code that is Miro Heiskanen or a good season John Klingberg behind, you can get away with a little bit because the defense can be that transitional mechanism. But unfortunately, the state of the defense right now, they're not getting that job done, which leaves it to the forwards to get that job done. And we're seeing mm-hmm. just how limited the Stars offense is. The forwards aren't good enough to make a three zone, you know, to progress the puck through all three zones by themselves. And mm-hmm. the defense doesn't seem to always be good enough to progress it out of the, you know what I mean? So it's sort of that we're watching the team wind up in a spot where it's not so much a cohesive, you know, systemic, like let's all move the puck down the ice as one, right? This team, it's a team that's stuck waiting for a single pass or a lengthy scamper or, you know, one player to affect like three zones worth of change. And that's just, it's harder to predict that. Yeah. And it's harder to do that when you're not good.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the places I think they miss Heiskanen so much is how in the defensive zone, once he got to a puck, his skating could create enough separation for him. And it has his whole career for him to actually be able to make a good pass, even with his elite vision and everything. You still need a step or two to be able to like actually see what's going on the ice so that even if you're going to do this, their standard breakout kind of up to the forward on the left wall. And then he can chip it either a lot up the boards or back up to the middle of the ice if they have, you know, the F2 like coming up through there. He actually could create enough separation for them to kind of gather and start going north according to their structure. Whereas the rest of the defensemen, they're just like chipping it along or trying to win a battle, but there's just not enough team speed. And I don't mean skating speed, but just puck movement to allow them to move the puck up the ice with their pretty deliberate system, which again, they're not the only team that uses the system, but it's a pretty deliberate system. But when you're constantly rushed, it's just going to be really, really hard for you to get the puck up the ice in possession with enough players moving together with speed such that you can make good passes, make good plays. Heiskanen could create enough of that by himself, but they don't really have, Suter can't really do that effectively anymore. You could argue he never really could do it without Shea Weber back in Nashville back in the day, or with, you know, like Spurgeon and some other players in Minnesota that he played with. I mean, look at Goligoski. He's doing great playing with Spurgeon, who's another fairly small guy, Goligoski and Spurgeon. But how much does that remind you of Goligoski and Klingberg back in the day, where somehow they were always transitioning the puck north and really, really, even though, you know, occasionally, yeah, they'd get pushed around a bit in their own zone, they could move the puck north consistently as a team to create a way, way more chances than they would give up. Whereas the Stars are so kind of focused, it seems like, with the defensemen they do have and that they do lean on. When you have Esa Lindell, Yanni Hakanpaa, Ryan Suter, Joel Hanley, when those are four of your six defensemen out there, yeah, that puck's, you're going to be struggling to move that up there past the red line with anything approaching momentum to create anything.
Right, and so you end up with the puck getting dumped in and you aren't aggressive enough on the forecheck to get any pressure on the defense, and so they end up tic-tac-toeing. You know, you dump after their cycle game, you go for a line change, you get no pressure moving up, and all of a sudden they just lock and load and come back at you. And I think we saw a whole bunch of that against Toronto.
Yep. Well, and that's, I mean, think, like, they hardly have any forwards under 25 either. They don't have those young legs. Like, you don't have those career speedsters like, I hate to say it, but Como or Cogliano again. And you don't have the young legs. Like, Fox is not as fast now as he was 6 years ago.
No, you don't. And you also don't have the willingness to play the ones that you do, right? So the young players on the roster, Hintz, obviously, yeah, you got that. That's kind of taken care of itself. Robertson as well. But the next line is, you know, Gurionov is 24, Kiviranta is 25, Peterson is 22.
You know, and while none of those guys necessarily like as a, you know, fit like a glove, what you're describing, right? Those are, for better or worse, the young legs in the Stars forward lineup, and not a single one of the play, you know, Gurionov, Kiviranta, Peterson, not a single one of those players has really enjoyed a sustained or consistent spot in the lineup. So then it's almost one of those like, okay, well, if they are the way that you're describing the system, those players have an outsized importance, and then you're not playing them enough to let them, you know, and part of it is, you know, Kiviranta has been bad this year. Gurionov, you know, this is a pro Gurionov podcast, but he's had his warts this season as well. So it's not like these three, and Peterson as well. Like, it's not like these three guys are, if they were playing like Jason Robertson, we would be not having this discussion because they'd be, you know, playing Jason Robertson minutes, but they're not. Yeah. But again, it's this whole malaise, the lineup malaise of the Dallas Stars.
Yep. Well, the problem is the other six forwards in the lineup that they've been playing are going off memory, Foxa, Glendening, Raffel, Radulov, Ben Sagan. Like, those are all guys like 30, or like Sagan is the youngest guy in that group. Everyone else is in there, and he's coming off a pretty severe injury too. Like, of course, at this point in the year, you're not going to get suddenly like surprise offense or even surprise good play, just controlling play. I don't even really care if they get a ton of extra goals from those guys, but they're not even controlling play. They're still leaking goals. Like, Raffel is a minus 10. Glendening is a minus 12. Like, this is a big problem. Like, it's not just like, oh, they're not creating enough offense. It's they're bad in both directions, and the Stars haven't done anything to fix it. And it looks like Rick Bowness is about ready to pull his hair out, because the things that he's willing to try, it seems like he's tried them all and two and three times again, just to make sure that they won't work.
And you get into the veteran, you know, the veteran problem, which is the same, you know, it's the same thing as a veteran benefit, right? Coaches like veterans because they're predictable. There's a track record, there's a history, you know what you're going to get. Well, sort of the problem the Dallas Stars are running into is all of the things that we're describing. I would say that, you know, on the balance, Michael Raffel's having a pretty good season based on the player that he is. And I would say that Luke Glendening is probably giving the Stars a little bit more than they could have expected out of Luke Glendening. And, you know, that is nice, but it's also the problem, because those aren't guys that are going to your point, Robert, neither one of those guys is going on a, you know, 15 goal heater here down the stretch to put the Stars over the top into the playoffs.
Well, right, mid-30s guys don't tend to get better 60 games into the season. The way the human body works, when you're in your 30s, at least I can testify, you don't tend to recover as quickly as you do when you're in your early 20s or mid-20s.
Oh, I'm not, you know, I tend to get worse by about midday, let alone 6 games into the hockey season. Like.
Well, let's at least roll back a little bit and talk about the real elephant in the room, which is what carried them during their winning streak, and that's the power play.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter was that the Stars were not that great of a 5-on-5 team, and the power play carried them for significant portions of the season, and it's just gone into the toilet.
Yeah. And I would add to that, because they've gotten a handful of power play goals here and there lately, but overall, it definitely has slowed down from its, you know, top five.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily slowed down. I think that is a symptom of the Stars roster construction, and that it is so dependent on a small number of players. Like, unless you're, you know, like every player goes through, you know, peaks and valleys over the course of a season, right? And the challenge for the Dallas Stars that we've already talked about, their margins are so slim and their options are so small that one or two guys having, like, they win when one or two guys have good nights, and they lose when those same one or two guys don't have good nights. And there really isn't another recipe for, you know, this isn't exactly, it's not a team that has Val Nichushkin chipping in double digit goals, right? Like, it's there's just nothing. And yep. you wind up in a situation where, you know, think about game planning against the Dallas Stars, right? Like, yes, there are going to be some nights when the, you know, Pavelski line plays so very well and Klingberg's passes and dangles are falling. Like, there are going to be some nights when those things work so well that you're probably screwed. But there are also going to be a lot of other nights where the challenge of stopping the Dallas Stars is relatively straightforward, right? It's how Dallas beat Colorado last year, or 2 years ago in the playoffs, right? And it wasn't that they shut McKinnon down,
right? It was that they outscored Colorado everywhere else. And that's sort of the recipe against the Stars, right? If you can just jilt that power play a little bit, and you know, if they're not getting two goals, three goals, then you've got a pretty good chance to beat this team. Mm-hmm. Unless Jason Robertson goes on, you know, scores back-to-back tricks, in which case, yeah, you're probably not beating them anyway. So from a coaching perspective, like, okay, you know, sometimes you just burn the tape.
Exactly. And they're sort of in this situation that, I mean, it's been really crazy. I'm sure I've said this like 20 times by now, but if you hold Tampa Bay and Dallas up to each other over the last like 8 years, there have been so many similarities in Sagan and Stamkos. You know, they're pretty close in age. I think Stamkos is a year or two older, but they're pretty similar players. You know, they kind of always have been. And Stamkos, think of how Tampa has kind of weathered Stamkos's absence. You know, you think back to that miracle kind of one game, 5 minutes of ice time and the goal he had against Dallas in the cup final a couple of years ago. Like, they've been pretty much just fine when Stamkos has been out, because mm-hmm. they have depth both with players like Point at the top of their lineup and with a great third line wherever they construct it from, and even some fourth liners who are still chipping in goals here or there. Whereas Dallas kind of went the other direction with, no, we absolutely have to get all these goals from Sagan, right? We have to get all these goals from Jamie Benn. We need him to continue being Art Ross guy. Oh crap. Benn's only scored 14 goals this year. We got to yell at him again, right? We don't know what to do. We don't have the resilience. They don't have the depth to kind of
withstand that. That's been this team's DNA since Lindy Ruff was the coach.
Yeah. And it was a little more excusable, you know, eight years ago when, of course, yeah, you're not going to have quite the same amount of depth. And Benn and Sagan were the younger guys, you know, supplementing the supposedly like more older, reliable scorers, you know, whoever those guys were back then. But now, of course, they're predictably declining and struggling with injuries or penalty minutes or whatever. And Dallas hasn't adapted quickly enough with their roster to have at least the potential for depth. And even when they do have those players in the fringe, like Jacob Peterson, they seem almost dead set to find a reason not to play them. So you kind of start to wonder at a certain point what the game plan is, because it sure isn't to build a team like Tampa Bay, at least from the outside looking in.
Well, I think you end up having to take a look at what the plan is after this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you take a look at the way Dallas drafted up through 2017 to the way that they're drafting now. And it looks to me like Jim Neal has an idea of where he wants to go, but he kind of has pieces and parts that have made it up to the NHL level, but nothing in a consistent way. And we may not see that for another couple of years, because mm-hmm. the offensive force for the Dallas Stars is currently playing in the Canadian Hockey League.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing, you know, maybe, you know, I love the kid and there's something there, but, you know, Damiani isn't flashing right now, to me at least, he's not flashing elite NHL scorer for the Texas Stars now.
I mean, he's only scored one goal in seven games. That's 41 games fewer than it took Kiviranta to score one goal. So, yeah, he's barely
The guy whose stock went up the most with the year that Damiani's having this year is Adam Masker. Because he was his line mate and pretty much was the guy who that was Batman and Robin on the Texas Stars last year. And Maskarin decided that he wasn't going to get a chance at the NHL level, and so he went off to Sweden.
Yeah, well, I'll always kind of say that Maskarin, I think the scouting report on him was always that his shot took a little while to kind of load up, so it wouldn't play as well at the NHL level, which, you know, true or not, that was kind of, I think, the Stars' view of him. And so once he kind of got word that, okay, yeah, this is where I am in the pecking order, he decided to seek greener pastures. So I don't really fault him for that. I think if you want to fault the organization for that, that's an opinion you could have. But I think that was kind of the scouting report on him, is that his best tool really wasn't going to play that well at the NHL level. You know, kind of like with Honka, right? He could do things at the AHL level that just wouldn't quite work at the NHL level.
Right. So, now,
right or wrong, that's the view of him, I think, from the organization.
Let me throw this out there. What do you say to Dallas's overall team health and that having held back any opportunities for kids coming up?
Again, I'd say if there were kids that demanded inclusion in the roster, it might be. But realistically, right, they found a hole for Jake Oettinger to become the number one goaltender. They've been able to keep
you know, his play has made it so that it's impossible not to, but, you know, Jason Robertson's been stuck in the lineup. You know, Thomas Harley is really the only guy that you could maybe make the argument that, that until the D-Core started getting banged up, he wasn't getting a look. But my problem with that is I don't see a lot of, to your, you know, you'd mentioned moments ago, like Dallas's prized assets are below the AHL level. So I just don't see a lot of guys that are being blocked. Oh, if only we could get, you know, if only we could find a way to get Joel or Esperance into the lineup, right? That's just not really, that's not, you know, Texas is not good this year.
Well, yeah, really, realistically, the players are two that we've already seen this year, right? Who would be in that kind of zone for call up, which would be the 21-year-olds, like, or however old Damiani is. I think he's 21, but Ty DeLandria and Riley Damiani, they're the two guys that you would think if anyone's going to come up and kind of surprise, they'd be the two guys with the pedigree recently who could maybe, you know, you want a bottom six forward with speed who could be your F1. That's been DeLandria's kind of profile for years, and he just hasn't really made the next step because maybe that pick wasn't quite as good as it could have been since it was a tiny bit off the board anyway.
Sitting at 16 goals, 20 assists through 50 AHL games, so, you know, not nothing, but also not
he's
the sort of...
He's fine. Yeah, he's not a bust. He's fine. He just
but that's not the pace lineup that says, if only we could find a way to get this kid in the lineup.
Yeah. Well, and that's where you would say, you know, Damiani earned 7 games, again, averaging 8 minutes a night. So again, it's not like they're dying to put these kids into positions to dominate games or whatever, you know, however you feel about it. But Damiani is the guy that you bring in to add some goals, right? And he had, what, like 2 points in 7 games. So that's not good enough at 8 minutes a night to stick in this lineup with as bad as it is. Heck, Jason Robertson couldn't stick in the lineup at the beginning of last year, right? He got sent back down because he wasn't apparently good enough.
And going then further back than that, up. How long did it take Rupe to get himself nailed down to get the coaches to be able to locate him on the bench?
It's just frustrating because you think, look, maybe it's possible that Ottinger had to start the year in the AHL to really get confident. Maybe it's possible Jason Robertson had to be sent back down last year to have a Calder finalist season. Maybe it's possible Hintz needed to bounce back and forth. Maybe it's possible Jason Dickinson needed to be sent back to the AHL and up like 20 times throughout the year before that. Maybe these are all exactly the right things. Or maybe players, when they're at 21 and 22, should be getting the minutes that players like... That players like Glendening or even frankly Foxa, or even I don't care, even Jacob Peterson, if you're not going to trust him, put younger players in there and let them learn and make mistakes. I don't understand what's to be gained from you've tried it for 60 games now, and the bottom nine have just been a disaster for this team. And to not try something creative, I just feel like whatever happens at this point, you know, the Stars are barely fighting for the 8th playoff spot again after looking pretty good after those four wins against bad teams. Now they're right back into the playoff bubble. Look, you either make a bold move as a GM and as a coach and agree, yeah, we're going to bring a couple guys in here, or you just say let the chips fall where they may and trust that all these 30-year-olds will somehow, you know, find the fountain of youth in game 65.
Well, and the problem with the bold move is, you know, and this is something a drum I've banged on quite a bit, right? But in the grand scheme of things, Dallas is very well positioned in terms of its salary cap, right? Over the arc of multiple seasons, Dallas has the money to do pretty much whatever they want. But right now, this year, there's not a lot that they can do. Like they don't have the space to go out and get one of those big pieces that you're talking about.
But that's agreed. Like they'd have to like blow up the roster to get someone like Giroux or something like that in. Not saying they shouldn't still try, but that's the GM's job to like come up with solutions to these problems, to say maybe Ty DeLandria should actually be getting some of Radek Fox's minutes. And maybe that means we have to trade someone to make that happen. Maybe that means we have to send a third round pick and one of these marginal roster guys to Arizona to make space to try that. Maybe we have to try it, right? Yep. Third round picks are valuable. You don't want to just throw them away. But if this season is really as critical as they're saying it is, so that they're not going to trade Klingberg, they're not going to trade Holtby. If it's really that critical, then you have to do something. Because right now, they're just circling around that 8th spot. And that's not what I don't care what happened 2 years ago in the bubble. Like, that's not a recipe for success with this team.
It does kind of feel like this team has decided that it's going to embrace this. If we can just get in, we can be dangerous mentality. Yeah. And almost to the point where it's an organizational distraction, if that makes sense. Like, they're committed to this idea of being good doesn't matter, like 8 versus 7 versus, you know, because when we had this podcast in the middle of the 4-game winning streak, like, they were inching up on the top of the Central Division. Like, it wasn't insane to think that they were going to start catching some of those teams if they if they'd kept it going. And now we've just kind of settled back into this mentality of like, yeah, it doesn't matter where they finish. Just as long as they make the dance, they'll be dangerous. And that seems like it's worrisome thinking.
I was pretty confident, or not confident, but I was kind of optimistic. And just jump in, Mark. I'm talking way too much. If you need to shut me up. But I was pretty confident early in the season when they had that players only meeting. Como got waived the next day. Like, that to me was okay. Jim Nill was still not afraid to make some moves and to say, yeah, this ain't working. We got to try something else. And since then, it's been, I mean, what did they traded Tanner Caro for Marion Studenich? Like, that's pretty much it. Like, that to me is not aggressive. That's not problem solving. That's just hoping and wishing.
But I mean, the question I have is how much maybe Jim Nill doesn't want to go all in for this year if it costs him the future. Maybe he wants to have some finality with this group of players to say, I put together the best lineup that I can around this core. Let's get in the playoffs. Let's roll the dice and see what happens. And this team should be good enough to make the playoffs. And if that doesn't work out, and especially if it doesn't work out in a semi-disastrous way, maybe that's the signal that the organization needs, that maybe they need to, you know, cut the tree down and start growing some new stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I will say with next season, right, Klingberg obviously is a thing, but they'll be out from under Radulov's contract. They've already lowered Pavelski's hit by a million and a half. So they will have more room to wiggle. But
they will. I guess I just look at like that.
They'll also have to replace a backup goaltender, and they're going to have to find an extension for Robertson, and they're going to have to, you know, with Alexander Radulov leaving, even though his performance hasn't been there, that is theoretically a piece they'll need to replace in the top six, and those aren't exactly cheap. And oh, thank goodness they've got 3 more years of Radek Foxa, and, you know, Gurianov is going to be restricted. Who knows what they'll do? There's just a lot.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I look at that trade, like the Josh Manson trade that I think Colorado made, or whoever. You get a guy for, I think it was a second round pick and a mid tier prospect or something like that. And right-handed, right? Can move the puck a little bit. Probably not, you know, an outstanding player. But goodness gracious, if the Stars aren't desperate for a right-handed defenseman who can actually do positive things with the puck, even reputedly, because they're stuck. They chose to go out and sign a defenseman in Ryan Suter who refuses to play the left side. So they're desperate for righties, and that's where they've kind of gotten into these situations where you have these weird defense pairings, and Haskinen's been playing on his off wing pretty much all year because they put themselves in this position. So I it's hard for me to get excited about, well, next year is the year that everything's going to get fixed, when I think, you know what, there's plenty of teams willing to make moves right now. You can find a way. You don't have to go completely trade all your first round picks for rentals. You can still find a way to, as Jim Nill has done in the past, to tinker with the middle parts of the roster to make your team better. You know, this is a guy who traded Dylan for Demers, you know, a few years back when he needed to make a big change. That was a big, bold move, but it was absolutely a good trade. And I, you know, you'd hope that the Stars are still trying to make another move like that. I don't know if there's one out there to be had, but those to me are where Jim Nill should really be looking to make a move.
But even there, I mean, that move was at least reportedly as much having to do with Dylan's holding out on his contract than anything else. That was an old man hockey move.
Well, it was good for San Jose because they got the younger player, right? They get a young, big player. And Dallas gets a smaller player, but a righty also, you know, and a puck mover. I think Friedman mentioned way, way back when that he had also heard something about maybe the Stars kind of soured on Dylan after he he, you know, refused to sign their initial deal and it went to almost went to arbitration or whatever.
Yeah.
Didn't stop him from, you know, re-signing players like Eakin or Ben when they did this, you know, when they waited a little while to do this, or maybe Eakin didn't. I don't know. We don't need to relitigate this stuff, but yeah, I agree. That could have been it. But the point is, you got to find ways to make deals that help the team. And I don't think it has to be only a sell the future for a rental. I think it's clear the Stars need help. And in my mind, if the coach isn't able to find solutions, which he's more or less admitted he can't find, then it's up to the GM. And I don't know what's left to try.
Yeah. And I mean, my concern is, you know, if you want to bring in a scorer, you have to bring in a scorer who can score out of what Dallas throws out there as offense.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty special player.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. You don't need to get a Giroux. You just need to get someone who's going to be more effective than you know, Michael Roffel or Luke Glendening in those minutes. Like, scale them down, trade out Kiviranta with a cap hit or something in Sekera or whatever. Like, you can make space if you make it worth the team's while and bring someone in who's a middle six, like a, you know, these players exist, right? Andrew Kopp's a great example. These players exist who probably would make the team better as constructed.
Like a Michael Ryder type.
Yeah, oh man. That was great. Yeah. That was what for Cole, I think. I can't remember what that
Yeah, was. I mean, honestly, Eric Cole is another example of the type of player you're talking about. A guy that they're not in the superstar market, but they should be looking at dudes that are, you know, they should be. Ron Francis should be the first person Jim Neal calls every morning when he wakes up to see what's going on with Seattle, for that matter, Arizona, right? They probably, you know, they're blowing the whole dang thing up, right? They probably need some cheap guys under contract that can't say no to playing in the desert, right? It's there are teams out there with assets that would help the Dallas Stars.
Well, and Arizona's been scoring goals so much lately that they could probably use the Dallas Star just to keep them from making the playoffs.
Oh man.
I mean, did they scored what, 29 goals in 5 games or something ridiculous?
What must that be like?
And that's what trying to tank. I mean, talking about failure.
If I know anything about hockey this year, it's that if a team wins 4 or 5 games in a row, it means they're for real. And that validates all of the things that the team has done up to that point.
So let me steer it this way, because we need to start wrapping up. So we'll do one quick round of armchair GM before calling it a night. And Mark, I'll put you on the spot first. So then what do you do with this team right now?
I adjust the lines based on moving Foxa down to center on the fourth line, and I hold pat. I like where we're at, because it's going to sink or swim on its own.
How about you, Tippin?
I think I'd scale Parley up, give him some more minutes. I think he's earned him. His play really has been pretty solid lately, especially. I'd scale him up, make him Klingberg, you know. That's as Mark was saying, if you're going to sink or swim based on your own merits. So I'd say, okay, you guys are going to step up. We're going to give you these tough minutes. Let's see what you can do. Give Suter and whoever's with him, you know, if it's Hawking Paw, some second line minutes, and maybe you can do a little bit better instead of having to play 22 minutes or whatever. Maybe it'll be a little more solid. And see if that helps the transition a little bit. And then I'd be willing to bring Delandria up, jettison one of these guys who's barely getting minutes anyway. Studenich seems fine. Maybe he's something. No harm putting him in there. But you know what? Give Riley Fox a couple games off. You talk about, you know, Bonus talked about Peterson being tired because he's, you know, only 22. So he gets tired because he's used to only playing 50 games in the Swedish league or whatever. Some of these players, based on their play, are exhausted. So give Radek Fox a couple days off. Not, you don't have to wave him or anything, but give him a couple games off. Just check in with him, see how he's doing, find a different spot in the lineup for him. Put Roffel back with Ben and Gurianov. I still think that's the best Ben has looked all year, and probably the best Roffel has looked all year, really, is that Ben Gurianov Roffel line. I think that's that line solves a lot of problems for all three of those players. And that's the line that I would actually start leaning on as a you know, pseudo second line. Because I think they can do a lot of things that they haven't really found with their other forward lines, and then just put some more speed into the bottom six and see what happens. I don't, your bottom six shouldn't really sink, you know, save or screw your season. But I like that Ben Gurianov for Ralph line. I'd love to see that back.
I like that too.
I mean, at that point, you got Sagan and Radulov and Gurianov. Roll the dice.
Well, I will also say that Kivi Ranta Radulov Jacob Peterson line has also been outstanding in the fairly limited minutes it's gotten. They've been really, really good. But for whatever reason, Bonus got away from him really quickly, but after giving him a few shots. But that'd be my third line right there. Radulov, Kivi Ranta, and Peterson. Or even fourth line. I don't care. Just keep these guys together if they're working and trust that that'll work instead of sticking with the things that aren't working and then tossing around the young guys all the time and not letting them settle into something.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I like Kivi Ranta, no matter, I see all the bad stuff about him, but he gets on the puck, and Dallas has few and far between guys who can come in on the offensive end and be aggressive forecheckers. And that's what Kivi Ranta brings to the game.
Yep. I think Jim Nill's calling you to ask for your advice about that.
I think that's my lawyer. I don't know.
Don't give these ideas away, man. You're going to be a GM soon.
I mean, it will be interesting to see what they do. I do think that there is, I think it just comes at the answer right now, sadly, I think comes down to usage. And it's just getting out of this mentality of the Foxaline being this shutdown, you know, mainstay that you keep going back to, right? I think you're right. There has to be a reassessment of how this team, you know, should play, frankly, like who gets minutes, what they're supposed to do with those minutes. This is no longer a unit where the plan is to send one line out there, stifle as much of the game as possible, and then hope the top line pots a couple. Like they kind of have to risk it for the biscuit, as the kids say, with trying to find functional groups that can provide some secondary scoring.
Yep.
Who was it? Somebody up there in management said that they like having one shutdown line, and that struck me as one of the big problems that this team has.
It wouldn't be a problem if they did have one shutdown line.
Yeah, right, but they don't. Right when they have it.
But they don't. Yeah, they don't even have that.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what they do. A couple of interesting games, and Robert, it was a pleasure to have you back on the cast, my man.
Yeah, it's good to. I think we all feel a lot better after talking about all these
we
things.
We definitely solved all the problems.
I think so.
That's our job. Hey, it's great talking to you again, Robert.
Good to talk to you guys always. Take it easy.
And of course, thanks as always, Mark, KT as well, for stitching this whole thing together. Please don't forget to download, do the like thing, show us the proverbial love, and we'll talk again soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.